Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
The time is 5 minutes past nine. A very good morning to you all, wherever you are listening to us from, and welcome to Deutsche Welle's Africa Link program, straight from our studios here in Bonn, where the weather is warm, beautiful, and sunny. I'm Isaac Mugabe, your host. Coming up, mixed reactions in Zimbabwe after the central bank announces plans to print a local version of the US dollar and limit withdrawals.
Businesses will find it difficult to import stuff from countries like South Africa. I want US dollars to remain, notwithstanding the current shortages.
The Ugandan government bans the media from live broadcasts of opposition parties' activities.
If there is an order for Dr. Chiza Besigye not to continue with his defiance campaign, when you give him a platform, speak live to the whole world, then you are defying that order.
These stories plus your say coming up in the next 25 minutes. Don't go away.
Top story.
Zimbabweans have expressed concerns over plans by the country's central bank to print a local version of the US dollar and limit withdrawals. The move is intended to ease shortages of cash in circulation. Severe shortages of the US dollar used as local currency in Zimbabwe have forced many residents to become cash hunter-gatherers. Long queues are a common sight at banks in Harare. As DW's Columbus Mavunga reports, economists say the measures will not work to ease the problem.
Sitando Nyati, a communication specialist in Zimbabwe, is perturbed with the announcement by the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe that it will start printing bond notes which have the same value as the dollar.
There might just be panic, and we might find that the US dollar begins to disappear from the streets and people only be using the bond notes. But the danger is also that people then may not be able to withdraw any US dollars once the bond notes are in circulation, which will mean that it might start reappearing on the black market.
Tafazwa Mangwe, a former bank teller, is of the same opinion. He told DW that once the bond notes are out, they will be prone to inflation, as was the case in 2008.
Businesses will find it difficult to import stuff from countries like South Africa. I want US dollars to remain, notwithstanding the current shortages.
Besides the printing of the bond notes, the governor of the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe, John Mangungwa, said they would limit daily bank withdrawals to 1,000 US dollars. That means some ATMs would also be shut down, meaning Zimbabweans might be forced to stay longer in queues if they are to get cash from banks. Currently, the euro, Botswana pula, South African rand, Chinese yuan, Japanese yen, Australian dollar, and the Indian rupee are all considered legal tender in Zimbabwe. But it is the US dollar which is mostly in circulation. The new bond notes will be in $2, $5, $10, and $20 denominations. So are the measures of the Reserve Bank Governor Mangungwa, a stopgap measure. Economist John Robertson.
Now, the Reserve Bank Governor said he was going to block the leakages, but he failed to even mention one of the more serious leakages, which is that government officials feel that they deserve much better treatment than they can get from the local medical institutions. So when they need medical treatment, they leave the country and they pay for it at a very high price in very expensive hospitals outside the country. They feel that the education system, having been ruined by their policies in the last few years, is no longer good enough for their children. So their children are all at schools in foreign countries. Their children are at universities in foreign countries. That's a huge leakage. And the Reserve Bank Governor didn't even mention that.
Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe Governor John Mangungwa ruled out the return of the Zimbabwe dollar, which the country abandoned in 2009. He says bond notes are only the solution.
Columbus Mavunga in Harare. Now, Zimbabwe is not only battling the issue of cash shortages, but also a prolonged drought that has hit hard the country's wildlife. The country's Parks and Wildlife Management Authority says it cannot take care of wild animals. It is now calling on local farmers and private game rangers to buy them and save them from starvation and thirst. Drought across the region has left more than 4 million Zimbabweans in need of aid and destroyed the crops they rely on for food and export earnings. My colleague Jane Ayeko spoke to DW's Privilege Mushaniri, also in Harare, and started by asking him how serious the drought situation was, especially for the animals in the country's national parks.
The situation is bad, particularly in the northwestern of Zimbabwe, where we have our biggest national park, the Wange National Park. This park, most of the times, it always experiences water problems because it's situated in a very dry region. So despite the issue of drought, they always have to pump water from boreholes for the animals. And National Parks is currently struggling with funding, so they have to rely on donors and international conservation agencies for them to be able to cover the gap. But for this year, because of the drought, I think the situation is a bit worse.
Which animals are up for sale and in what quantity?
The national parks, unfortunately, did not specify the kind of animals that they are looking forward to sell or destock. But this includes elephants and lions. Zimbabwe currently has the estimate that it has 80,000 elephants and 54,000 are located in the Wange National Park. So it's a huge number, and that's what they are looking at selling. And when we ask national parks authorities, they are saying that they only disclose the information to the bidders.
Privilege, have the authorities given any numbers of animals that have so far died as a result of prolonged drought?
There is no figure at all on the number of animals that have died so far. The information that they are giving is not quantified.
Now, a notice that was issued in the newspaper invited members of the public with the capacity to acquire and manage wildlife to make offers to buy. What has been the response within Zimbabwe and elsewhere?
So far, the response as well is not easy to tell. Most Zimbabweans, for one to go and buy an animal, maybe they could be buying it for consumption, not for keeping. So in most Zimbabweans, they don't have the capacity. There are very few Zimbabweans, except for those that have been owning game reserves before, who have the capacity to come forward and buy animals. The national authority has not spelled out whether it is also open for foreigners to come and buy.
How have animal rights campaigners reacted to this announcement?
The conservationists and animal rights groups have a mixed feeling towards this because they are saying that over the years, they've been calling and suggesting different wildlife management strategies, but it seems maybe probably the national authority has not been accepting their suggestions. So they are now saying this problem that we are having because of the drought is a result of the mismanagement of the wildlife authority. And they are saying that, you know, instead of them calling for buyers for these animals, they must just identify areas in the country where they can shift these animals from distressed areas to areas that have better, you know, forage for these animals to survive. And hence they also the suggestion that, you know, they must not sell these animals maybe probably to foreign countries, but why not look at donating maybe some of the animals to countries that are in need of these animals, particularly in Africa.
Privilege Mushaniri in Harare.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
With only a week after the formation of a transitional government of national unity in South Sudan, President Salva Kiir has appointed 5 new presidential advisors to serve in several sectors of the economy, bringing the number of his advisors to 10. A cross-section of South Sudanese have criticized the move and are worried that it might cause ripples within the newly formed government of national unity. Wake Simon Wudu has details.
Attorney Wake Attorney Kiir's spokesman told the DW that the appointment of 5 extra advisors to bring the number to 10 is meant to boost service delivery across the country.
The president wanted this time to be a very serious time, that the people of South Sudan, after signing peace agreement and after forming the government of national unity, the challenge is for this government to ensure it delivers services to the people and also to ensure that the security is maintained in the country, as well as returning the economics to its normal situation.
Atene says the president's decision was based on the powers granted to him in the 2011 transitional constitution of the Republic of South Sudan, and that he has not in any way disowned the transitional constitution as argued by some South Sudanese. Ajo Noel Julius, a South Sudanese practicing lawyer and director of Ajo and Co. Advocates, says President Kiir acted outside the stipulation of the peace agreement.
If you look at the structure within which the transitional government is established as per the agreement for the resolution of conflict in South Sudan, if you look at Chapter 1, Article 4, it doesn't give any room for presidential advisors. I think if you go by the peace agreement, then we would say that the appointed 10 presidential advisors does not have a space within the agreement as it is assigned.
First Vice President Riek Machar's SPLM in opposition officials were also caught unaware by President Kiir's decision. They insist the peace agreement does not give Kiir the powers to appoint advisors in the transitional government of national unity, and that this could highlight another challenge to the implementation of the peace agreement. Ajo Noel Julius is a South Sudanese practicing lawyer and a director of Ajo and Co. Advocates.
This decision simply means we're taking a step back. It means as we are hopeful of propelling forward, this is another hurdle that we need to overcome. We already know we have a number of things that we need to overcome. The 28 states, they're working on the speaker. People have to work on boundaries of the states that were created, if any, if they will stand. Again, now we have another issue of presidential advisors.
Among the new appointees are former SPLM Deputy Secretary General Ann Ito as Agriculture and Food Security Affairs Advisor, Senior Army Commander General Clement Wani Konga, appointed as Advisor for Special Affairs, and former Minister of Education John Guy, appointed as Education Affairs Advisor. Some of them will head military, security, economic, legal, religious affairs, presidential envoy, decentralization, and intergovernmental linkages.
Wake Simon Wudu in the capital, Juba. And you're listening to DW's Africa Link program straight from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe, your host. Still to come, Kenya braces itself for the influx of tourists as the summer season sets in. Plus, you'll say a chance to listen to what you've been saying about the stories that we've covered for you. I'll be back right after this.
Human rights.
The Ugandan government has banned the media from covering live broadcasts of opposition's activities. The ban comes as President Yoweri Museveni prepares to swear in on the 12th of this month. Earlier on, the opposition announced a series of activities, including demonstrations to prevent the swearing ceremony from taking place and holding weekly prayers for the country. Our correspondent Alice Gita reports that this prompted the government to seek a court order putting an end to all demonstrations and other activities.
We are stopping. There is a stop, an order that don't cover life.
That was Uganda's Minister of Information, Major General Jim Muhwezi, as he announced a total ban of live media coverage of opposition activities. The leading opposition party, the Forum for Democratic Change, had announced a defiance campaign against President Museveni's swearing in this month. One major demonstration was to take place on Thursday, but in the early hours of the morning, the police and the army deployed anti-riot officers around the city and at the residences of the opposition leaders. Now, President Museveni has made it illegal to hold demonstrations in the country and prevents the media to report about them. Information Minister Major General Jim Huez says reporting on any opposition activity, the journalist would be aiding and abetting a crime.
If there is an order for Dr. Kizza Besigye not to continue with his defiance campaign, when you give him a platform to speak live to the whole world, then you are defying that order.
The main opposition candidate, Dr. Kizza Besigye, is still under house arrest for rejecting President Museveni's victory in the February presidential election. Besigye's opposition FDC party has been holding weekly prayers at their headquarters in Kampala, calling for divine intervention into the political crisis. This week, people who turned up for the prayers were stopped and 24 were arrested, including a pastor and the mayor of Kampala City, Erias Lukwago. The Inspector General of Police, Major General Kale Kahura, had said the police will not allow any public activities by the FDC. But legal minds in Kampala questioned the legality of the order, arguing that the Uganda Constitution gives people the right to assembly and a religious gathering and spells out both freedom of expression and that of the media. Nicholas Opio is a human rights lawyer in Kampala.
To interpret that order to mean an order against the world, including banning media houses from covering legitimate activities around the country, is to overstretch that order. That entire procedure cannot be used to suspend the enjoyment of a fundamental right for a large section of society.
However, Uganda's Deputy Attorney General, Mwesigwa Rukutana, insisted the order was well within the law.
It applies to the subject matter, not merely to the parties to the suit, because it says any other person. Everybody is bound to respect this order, whether he is party to the proceedings before the court or not.
Broadcasters believe the order is going to affect their objectivity and balanced reporting of political events. Ken Kalisa is the chairperson of the National Association of Broadcasters.
I believe BCJ has followers. They will feel that we are kind of maybe covering one side. So we feel it's going to affect media houses. And in one way or the other, maybe people will think we are not giving them the truth.
Besigye and his FDC party had earlier announced that they will not allow Museveni to be sworn in unchallenged and had called for an independent audit into the results of the February 2016 general elections.
Alex Gita in Kampala. Now, from July this year, Kenya will start to feel the positive effects of its aggressive tourism recovery campaign internationally after it secured the reintroduction of a weekly European charter plane in the coastal region. TUI Poland Charter, whose planes have 180 passenger capacity, will begin flying directly to Mombasa's Moi International Airport during the summer period. Its sister companies TUI Germany and TUI UK are skeptical on resumption of their operations in Kenya due to security concerns. Jenny Nyenji has this report.
The Kenya coastal region has for years remained a favorite tourist destination due to warm weather, stunning beaches, diverse marine life and beautiful hotels. However, the number of tourists have reduced over the years after a spate of terror attacks by Al-Shabaab militants. Some hotels had to shut down, leading to 30,000 job losses. Some of the hotels closed are in Kilifi constituency, whose member of parliament is Gideon Mungaro.
Tourism is not faring well. It's recovering, but very slowly. As you are aware, to kill tourism takes one day. To build it, it takes 10 years. So it's a process. I am sure people will come back to Kenya, but it'll take time. The government has played its role on the war on terrorism. The terrorism challenges are Kenya is not exceptional. So we just have to be vigilant so that people can go on with their life.
Nevertheless, there seems to be a light at the end of the tunnel after tourist agency TUI Poland agreed to resume its operations in Kenya. Its charter plane with a capacity of 180 passengers will for the first time be flying to the Kenyan coast from 1st of July. It will be operating to Mombasa on a weekly basis. This comes after the Kenyan government issued several incentives program to lure tourists back to its soil. Charter planes carrying tourists to the coastal region will no longer have to pay landing fee. The government has also waived off visa fee for foreign nationals who are under the age of 16 and a payback of $30 subsidy to every passenger landing in Mombasa and Malindi airports. Here is Kenya Tourism Minister Najib Balala.
We must have a strategy, the immediate short-term strategy, the medium strategy, and the next 15-year strategy. That is what we want to do. If we are going to take tourism seriously, we need to look in the next 15, 20 years. What type of tourism do we want?
The government has also stepped up security in key areas, especially in hotels at the coastal region. Kilifi Member of Parliament, Gideon Mungaro.
Every hotel is attended by armed security officers, yeah, camouflaged, and like before, where they just sit at the gate. So I think security has been intensified. Only the hotel owners are aware of the presence of the police and at which point And some people probably don't like having police walking in guns in their hotels. But those which are being protected and that those who are, people request also, they are all provided security.
President Uhuru Kenyatta, during his recent visit in Germany, met with TUI Group company directors in Berlin. Speaking on phone, TUI Group head of international markets, Bernd Hoffmann, said the discussions only focused on the future cooperation between both sides. He further stated TUI Germany and TUI UK will not resume its charter flights in Kenya anytime soon due to security concerns.
Jenny Nyingi with that piece on tourism in Kenya.
Your say.
And now we turn the mic to you, the listener, to hear your opinion on the stories that we've been covering for both radio and online. Here's Eunice Wanjiru and Jen Nyingi with your say.
We covered a wide range of topics this week, but the two that caught the attention of our listeners was on Kenya. There have been heavy rains in the country which caused flooding.
Well, and this brought about the collapse of a six-story building in a residential area in the capital, Nairobi. Over 20 people lost their lives, hundreds were injured, and many are still missing. Investigations are still underway to look into why the building collapsed. This story got lots of reactions on our Facebook page.
David Eason commented and hopes that the property developers will be held accountable if found at fault. Mbaga Karim offers condolences to the victims who lost their loved ones, and he also says that the people involved in putting up the building should be held accountable.
Now, what is surprising, Eunice, is that over 3 days after the residential block collapsed, a six-month-old baby was found alive in the debris. Franco Roberti from Tanzania commented and said, "The fact that the child is alive is a reason to thank God."
We also got lots of comments from the ivory burning that took place in Kenya last Saturday. Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta set fire to more than 100 tons of elephant ivory. It is believed to be the largest stockpile ever destroyed. Chairman Adrioli wrote, "Well done, President Uhuru Kenyatta. I am blessed to see the bold stand you take against poaching. Let's stand together against cruelty to animals."
Geoffrey Noya Asante sees it as a bold step. He says, "Oftentimes we've had leaders whose words and actions contradict when it comes to policy implementation. President Uhuru Kenyatta has really proven to be different. There is hope." Shiro Mark can't imagine how many animals have to die in the love of money. She says that animals have the right to be in this planet, just like human beings.
We posted an article on the topic on our page, which was titled, "To Burn or Sell Ivory, Which Can Put an End to Elephant Poaching?" Alessandra Nicole commented on this and said that burning would just make the ivory that's left on the black market much more valuable. And Bill Jackson agrees with Alessandra. He goes on to say, "Use, sell and proceed to go fight poaching."
As for Karanja Kiru, the statement being communicated is that ivory is only valuable on a living elephant. Johanna Howell is also for destroying ivory. She says that this way, no one can forge certificates making all ivory illegal.
And there we come to the end of this week's Yose. Thank you for your comments and feedback, and we're looking forward to hearing more from you.
Thanks indeed, Eunice Wanjiru and Jenny Ngingi. And in case you'd like your comment to be read on your segment, just send an email with your comment to feedback.africa@dw.com, a letter to Africa Link DW53110 Bonn, Germany, or an SMS to country code 491609575910. And now a recap of our main stories. Zimbabwe's central bank announces plans to print a local version of the US dollar and limit withdrawals. South Sudan's President Salva Kiir has appointed another 5 advisors, bring the total number to 10. And the Ugandan government has put a ban on live coverage of opposition activities. With that, we come to the end of today's program. My colleague Jen Ayeko will be here next week. Do join her if you can. On behalf of the entire Africa Link team, I'm Isaac Mugabe, wishing you a splendid weekend ahead.